Okay, so I sent out, fast forward a few thousand years now, from the year 100 BCE. Well, first of all, to the 13th century. So the 13th century was the golden era of French Jewry. This was the era of the Nairobi Rothenberg. This was the era of Rabbeinu Peretz, Rabbeinu Shimshon of Shams, the era of Rabbeinu Rechiel, who we'll talk about a little bit today. As I mentioned, I think yesterday morning, this era comes to a crashing halt in two sad events about 50 years apart, 1244 after the disputation of Paris, the first medieval disputation of Judaism, 1306, the official expulsion of the Jews from all the lands of France. 1240 is the disputation, 1244, all the Shasin in France are burnt. People fear and feel that Torah will conclude a little bit, not in front of them, but at a different location nearby, for like the historical accuracy. Don't jump to conclusions looking for divine codes. And 1244, the Maharam Rothenberg witnesses the burning of all the Shasin, worries about the future of Torah, and authors the very famous kina, Shali Serufa Ba'esh, in which he turns to Torah, which is being consumed in fire. He nicknames Torah Serufa Ba'esh, and he asks Torah to ascend to Shemayim to bequeath HaKadosh Baruch Hu on behalf of the Jewish people, and on behalf of the Torah. So the 13th century is the golden era of French Jewry, and it concludes 1306. And then one of the leading figures of that era is Rabbeinu Yechiel, Rabbeinu Yechiel of Paris. Rabbeinu Yechiel is the Rebbe of Rabbeinu Yitzchak of Korbil, one of the most famous Balei HaTosfosin, and the author of the Smach, the Sefer Mitzvos Katan. Rabbeinu Yechiel is the primary defender of Judaism in this disputation in 1240. 1244, the Shasin are burnt. At some point soon after, these dates are unclear, some say 1257, but at some point, Yechiel emigrates from Paris to Eretz Yisrael. Now keep in mind that the Maharam Rothenberg, who is most famously incarcerated in France, and his body remained 14 years after he died, was probably in prison because he fomented towards emigrating to Israel. So emigrating to Israel from France is not a simple matter. But he makes it to Israel, according to most positions. It's not clear, but many people believe that he starts a yeshiva in Akko. He probably gets to Yerushalayim, but probably moves north. Very similar to who else starts in Yerushalayim, but ultimately returns to Akko. I mean, everyone lands in Akko. No one lands. There's no landing spot in Yerushalayim. You arrive by boat. Everyone lands in Akko, but they travel to Yerushalayim. Who most famously in that century? The Ramban. The Ramban travels from Spain, makes Aliyah, can barely identify a minyan in Yerushalayim, and has to return to Akko. So the Ramban from Spain probably at some point meets Rabbeinu Yechiel of Paris, walking around in Akko, two of the great giants of Torah from Europe, relocated. And of course, the irony is the Ramban also participated in his own disputation of Judaism, the Barcelona disputation in 1262. So two very interesting figures from the 13th century, one from France and one from Spain. Now, the Rabbeinu Yechiel is interesting to us because he's one of the first, probably the first major Torah personality, major halachic authority, to consider resuscitating Hakrabas Korbanos. Should we be Makrav Korbanos, even though we don't have the Beis HaMikdash, because we're in Yerushalayim, or because we're near Yerushalayim? Now, what is a star? How can you even conceive of a Korban without a Beis HaMikdash? Seems to be obvious that until a Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, Korbanos are off the table. Korbanos are inconceivable. But not according to the Shitas HaRambam. So it all begins with the Shitas HaRambam. There's a famous machlokis in Shas, whether the Kedusha that was installed when we return. Kedusha is not something automatic. When Avraham Avinu stands on Har HaMoriah, the mountain has no halachic Kedusha. He could be Tamei, he could be Tamei Meis, he could be a Baal Keri. It's an important place. But objects, people, and time, and location can only have Kedusha for objects if they're installed with that Kedusha halachically by a human act. So we have to install Kedusha to time. We're Mekadosh Rosh Hashanah, Mekadosh Rosh Hashanah. We have to install Kedusha to an object. We have to install Kedusha to Yerushalayim, to the Beis HaMikdash. The only time, object, person, or location that has innate, divinely endowed Kedusha Shabbos. Shabbos is Kadosh Ketcha Me'elah. Kedusha V'kayim, the Gemara says. Whether people live, don't live, whether people keep Shabbos or don't keep Shabbos, it cycles on its own, and it possesses innate Kedusha. Everything else has to be installed with Kedusha. So when Yahushua captured Eretz Yisrael, he installed Kedusha to this land by the act of capturing. And that gave it laws of Trumos and Maisos and other halachas which didn't obtain before the land had Kedusha. when we returned under the auspices of Koresh and subsequent Persian kings, so we bought lands and we acquired lands through royal decrees, that was called a chazaka. And the chazaka installed Kedusha. Is that Kedusha everlasting and perpetual, or does it vanish when we leave Eretz Yisrael? Kedusha Rishon or Kitcha L'Shaita, or Kedusha Rishon or Kitcha L'Shaita or Kitcha L'Yasid Lavo? Is it eternal, with Shaita V'Lasid Lavo, or does it vaporize when the Jews leave? Most Rishonim believe Kedusha Ashliya, Kitcha L'Shaita, that the Kedusha, which the only bubble installed to Eretz Yisrael, dissipated when we left after the Romans captured Eretz Yisrael, including the Rambam. So there's no Kedusha, which is why, of course, our Shemitah is only Midrabanan, probably, which is why the Hetem Mechira is allowance and a leniency which can be implemented. Because all this Shemitah today, more or less, is the Rabbanan, according to most Poskim. The Rambam draws an important distinction. Source number two, the Rambam Poskim's based on a Mishnah in Ediot. Ediot were certain testimonies that were said to conclude important halachos. Source number one, Paraches Mishnah Vav, Amar Rabbi Yoshua, Shamati, I've heard, Shemachriven Afal Pi She'ein Bayis. That you can offer a korban even without the Beis HaMikdash. The Rambam writes, source number two, changes Rabbi Yeshua a bit, but for us the Rambam is crucial because we possibly like the Rambam. Lefikach, source number two, makrivan akorbanos alfa pi she'en shambayis. Korbanos without a Beis HaMikdash are feasible. She'kedusha rishona, kitcha l'shaita v'kitcha v'yasid lavo, because the kedusha of Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash is eternal. Even though the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael dissipated, there's a specific Kedusha about Yerushalayim, which the Rambam explains in the next halacha. V'lama niyomer b'mikdash v'Yerushalayim Kedusha Rishon v'Kitcha l'Yasid Lavo. Why is the Kedusha of Yerushalayim eternal as opposed to the general Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael? Or the Kedusha Ashar Eretz Yisrael in Yishmita Amaisu as lo Kitcha l'Yasid Lavo? Here's the punchline. V'fisha Kedusha as ha-mikdash v'Yerushalayim mipnei ha-shchina v'ha-shchina eina b'tein. Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael is because we conquered the land. Jews left, the Kedusha dissipated. Kedusha based on Mikdash is transcendent, it's celestial. Hashem is still there, based on a pasuk in Parshas Bechukosai, source number 2, paragraph 2, line 4, Vahashimosi es Mikdashechem. I will destroy your base on Mikdash. Chazal Darshin Amru Chachamim, Afal Pishashamimim, Bikdushasan Hemondin. Even without the structure, even when they're in ruins, the Hashimosi, they're still called Mikdashechem. They still possess Kedusha. This is the platform of today's shiur. Without the Rambam Shita, there'd be no thought, no glimpse, no consideration, no Beis HaMikdash, no Korbanos, nothing to even consider. The Rambam's position made this whole consideration viable. And this was the launching point of Rabbi Yechiel of Paris in his yeshiva, probably in Akko. By the way, he probably, again, it's hard to know, there's a big controversy about whether he even made it to Eretz Yisrael. They uncovered some stone over a Beis HaMedrash that said, Yeshivas Chachmei Tzofat, sounds like a Rishis Yeshiva. He was probably buried near Haifa. According to the position that he did make Aliyah, he did settle in Akko, he's buried somewhere in this region, somewhere up north. Based on this, Rabbeinu Yechiel wants to consider Korbanos. It dies down, it's not feasible. The Crusaders are dominating Yerushalayim. The last thing these Crusaders are going to allow are Jews to reinstate Korbanos. So it becomes theoretical, and it goes into hibernation for about 500 years, 600 years. Now it's the middle of the 19th century. A lot of ferment. Hasidim and the Vilna Gaon have returned to Eretz Yisrael. Hasidim have returned to Eretz Yisrael, late 18th century Hasidim, early 19th century Talmidim and the Vilna Gaon. Now it's feasible. Talk about Korbanos, where barely a few Jews live in Israel. Remember, in the 19th century, you couldn't live in the 18th century, you couldn't live in Yerushalayim as an Ashkenazi, because a lot of Jews had migrated to Yerushalayim at the beginning of the 18th century, ran up a lot of debt, the Muslims expelled them from town. If you wanted to live as an Ashkenazi in the 18th century of Yerushalayim, you had to dress as a Sephardi. If you were an Ashkenazi, it wasn't anti-Semitism, it was the Arab mob. The Arab mafia would murder you because they held you accountable for debts with the Jewish community had run up in the early 18th century. The Yehuda HaNagid, very famous Aliyah of Yehuda HaNagid. So anyway, so for other Jews that are living in Yerushalayim, maybe Korbana should be sacrificed. Now, the conversation focuses upon Korban Pesach. Why is Korban Pesach unique? Why is it about Korban Pesach, not about a Korban Tamid? A Korban Pesach, not about Musafim? Korban Pesach, not about Yom Kippur? If there's no Beis HaMikdash, we could be mocked with Korbanos. Why is it Korban Pesach that gets all the attention? Why are we talking about it on Pesach? Not the whole year round? The answer is as follows. You can't bring carbon seabors because carbon seabors require Machzis Hashem. So all the carbonas that the seabor will offer are disqualified because we don't have an apparatus or a mechanism for collecting Machzis Hashekel and creating the dynamic of the seabor. You know, the Beis Din, a Sanhedrin, we can't collect money from every Jew. So the notion of a seabor or carbon seabor is disqualified because of Machzis Hashekel. What about carbon yachta? What about a chatas? How many chatas do we all owe? How many olos would we like to bring? How many? Problem is, we're tummy. And Tuma is not in any way swayed for yachit. And we're tummy because we're all coming into contact with mace. And even if we didn't come into contact with mace, we don't have a paraduma, so we can't alleviate that Tuma. Even if we're not tummy for coming into contact with mace, most males are zavs, most females are zavas, and even though to remove the impurity, for that truma, you go to a mikvah and you're fine. You have to bring a carbon, a zav and a zava, as opposed to a nida, has to bring a carbon at the tail end of the yemei atuma in order for them to enter the base of mikvah and process korbanos. So it's not just that we're all tummy mace because maybe we came into contact with dead bodies or someone that came into contact with dead bodies. Well, probably we're zav or zavas at some point, and that renders us tummy for entering the base of mikvah. When it comes to Karban Pesach, even though it's not really a carbon seabor, enjoys a very interesting halacha called Tuma Hutra Betzibor or Tuma Dechuya Betzibor. It's not clear how we pass it, which itself is important, but essentially, if most of the population is Tame, hard to know how we count most. Do we count based on the population or do we count based on the Shvatim? Most of the Shvatim, most of the population. But at that point, we could be Makrif even though we're Tame. That whole scenario, which I spoke about on Sunday, where there were some people that were Tamei Mei, so they couldn't bring the Karban Pesach, they were individuals. How did it been most of the population, we would have employed the principle of Tuma Hutra B'tzibor. Now it's not so clear, because as I mentioned, there's a machlokas as to whether we say Tuma Hutra B'tzibor or Tuma Dechuya B'tzibor. Very, very complicated. Hutra means we ignore the Tuma entirely. Dechuya means we can over-tally it. The nafkamina is, do we ignore the Tumah even without it sits? If we hold Tumah Hutra B'tzibor, we just ignore the Tumah and Makrif. If we hold Tumah Dechuya B'tzibor, then it's only while the Kohen Gadol was wearing the tzitz, and that combination that most of the people are Tumah and the Kohen Gadol was wearing the tzitz, we absolutely don't have the tzitz. So here the question of over or neglecting or ignoring the Tumah is not so clear, because this Tumah Hutra or Dechuya is not clear, and do we differentiate between when your body is Tumah or when the meat of the carbon is Tumah? But at least that's the platform that invites the conversation, and the conversation is authored primarily by one of the great leading Zionist rabbis, or rabbis who supported Zionism of the 19th century, Reb Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, in his famous sefer called Derishas Tzion. Now, Derishas Kalischer is a Talmud of two very, very important great Torah luminaries. Without being a Talmud of these two luminaries, I don't think people would have taken him seriously. But he's a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva Eiger. He's halt, which means he's in contact with Chassam Sofer, Yeager Samuel. And he also is a Talmud of the Nesivos HaMishpat. Nesivos HaMishpat is a Yaakov Leiberbaum, who is, of course, known to most yeshiva personalities as a Nesivos. He wrote a very famous magnum opus on Chosh HaMishpat, but many, many, many other svar. He was a contemporary of the Ketzos HaChoshen. So these are the leading figures at the tail end of the 18th century, the first part of the 19th century. Him being a Talmud of theirs lends him instant credibility. Otherwise, I'm not sure how seriously this conversation would have been taken. The Chassam Sofer takes the conversation very seriously. Once Chassam Sofer clocks in, Chassam Sofer is not just one of the leading Torah scholars, but he dominates Hungarian Jewry. For about 120 years, basically all of Hungarian Judaism is being led by a Talmud or a son or grandson of Chassam Sofer. So he really becomes a dominant figure, and he's fairly supportive of this whole conversation towards reinstating, again, Karban Pesach, not the other Karbanos, because they're impossible. One of the interesting sources that he cites, just to get you into the conversation, then we'll see where this conversation halts, where most overwhelmingly, 99.99999% of responsible halacha katharis today would not offer a Karban Pesach, but it's not as disqualified as you think. It falls on technical grounds, not necessarily on the fundamental grounds. Moran Zvachim says, source number 3, Amar Rabba Bar Rafanan Rabbi Yochanan, Shloshin Avim, Alui Mahim Minagola. There were 3 Nevi'im who ascended from the Golas, according to we'll see a little bit later maybe, sounds like this was Haggai, Zechariah, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, excuse me, three Nevi'im ascended with them, and each had something to say when they returned to Eretz Israel. Echad Shehev Lehem Al Mizbeach, one told them the dimensions of the Mizbeach, because he had lived through the first base of Mikdash. Echad, source number three, line two, Shehev Lehem Al Bakot HaMizbeach, we'll talk about this a little bit later, the location of the Mizbeach. The Echad, Shehev Lehem Shemakriven Afal Pi Shein Bayis. Because remember, this was very relevant because the Beis Hamikdash was seriously delayed about 18 years. Koresh authorizes the construction of the Beis Hamikdash. They lay the groundwork. It seems like they actually built the Mizbeach. And only about 18 years later, after the miracle of Purim, is the Beis Hamikdash reauthorized, Ezra and Nehemiah return. So this wasn't a theoretical question. This is a real question. At some point in Eretz Yisrael, the Beis Hamikdash hadn't yet been constructed, but there was a Mizbeach. And one of these three Tanaim, one of these three Nevi'im said, don't worry, you can be Makrif, and this becomes one of the sources for the Rambam's Shita. Okay, so the conversation rages, 18th century, 19th century, some sulfur clocks in, Binyan Sion, Rabbi Yaakov Ettinger, who's the Rebbe of, anyone know? Rabbi Shem Shina Frohl Hirsch, very well-known Rabbi Shem Shina Frohl Hirsch, Rabbi Yaakov Ettinger, the author of the Orach Lener, probably the name that others have been exposed to. So, why doesn't this succeed? It's taken very seriously, there's a lot of halachic literature. Why does it fail? Not because of fundamental opposition, because there are three factors that come into play. Number one, in order to be makriv a korban, we need a kohen. Do we really have kohen today? Well, what do you mean? We offer aliyos to kohenim and midochin and tamik. Overwhelmingly, most of our kohenim in the contemporary era are what halacha calls a kohen muchzak. Kohen muchzak means everyone knows he was a kohen, everyone knows his father was a kohen, everyone knows his grandfather was a kohen. Everyone knows that family has always been Kohen. Can they trace themselves all the way back to a Kohen who actually performed that Avodah on the Mizbeach? Very few of any. Some say the Rappaport family can, some say the Shach. Shach was the Rappaport. Some, there are a couple, but that type of Kohen is called a Kohen Miyuchas. A Kohen Miyuchas can trace his family lineage back to the Mizbeach. We have very few, if any, Kohen Miyuchasin. So what type of Kohen is necessary for Avodah based on Mikdash? So, Nehemiah, it's a very interesting story. I mentioned Nehemiah before, source number five. There were many Kohanim who stepped forward in the days of Nehemiah. Again, there was a break in the Masara. They lost some of their pedigree, lost some of their documentation. Source five, line two. So they investigated and said, where's your pedigree papers? Where are your papers? The longing song. And they didn't produce the documentation, source 5, line 2. Vayigalu menakum. He said, you can't be Kohen. You're disqualified from being Kohen. Is this reflective of the Pesach? That only a Kohen Miyuchas can perform Avodah? So it's unclear because Ezra and Nehemiah were operating under very, very stressful conditions. The entire pedigree of the Jewish people have been thrown into confusion. Anyone know the name of the fourth paragraph of Kiddushin? What's the parak's name? Asara Yochsin Alu Mibavul Nezra. There were 10 different types of pedigrees. Whatever was in a Jew, some were Jews, and some were Shtupim, and some were Mamzerim, and some were Chalolim. And of course, it wasn't just that they lost their pedigree innocently because they had neglected some of their papers, they had all intermarried. The big scourge against which Ezra fought was Jewish intermarriage with Babylonian women. So it's fairly probable that Nehemiah was trying to tighten the screws and be a little bit more conservative rather than being more halachic by refusing any Kohen, because he wanted to make a statement that in line with our overall policy to try to purge and try to cleanse some of this confused and adulterated Hebrew pedigree, Jewish pedigree, let's be very, very careful about whom we allow to ascend. So the fact that Nehemiah was so strict may not be indicative. However, our good friend the Rambam, that's possible, at least as the way it appears from Nehemiah. The Rambam, source number 4, Ezeu Kohen Miyuchas, he first describes the Kohen Miyuchas. Kol she'idilu she'idin shu Kohen ben ploni ha'Kohen u'ploni ben ploni ha'Kohen ad ish she'eino tzarech bedika. Until you reach a person who doesn't need bedika because he was a Kohen, she'shimesh agav mizbeach. So, the first problem is a Kohen. How can you allow a person, even though we all see him as a Kohen, that's fine for giving an aliyah, that's fine for duchening, that's fine for once the bench, reshus ha'Kohen, but to actually serve and perform a korban, maybe a little bit trickier. Some sofer tried to defend this as a Gemara in Kiddushin that makes a drasha based on the pasuk Baruch Hashem Chela Ufal Yadav Tirtzeh, Pasuk in Mezos Abracha, Moshe praises Shevet Levi, Baruch Hashem Chelo, the Gemara Darshan's Afilu Chalolim. The Halacha says, if a Kohen were to perform Avodah on the Mizbeach, then after the Avodah, it turns out it wasn't pedigree, that Avodah is still kosher to the Eved, even though we found out post-facto. Would that be something we can employ a priori, before he enters the Mizbeach? Chassam Sofer felt that it was, just wanted you to hear Chassam Sofer's voice. This isn't a major, major statement, but I want Chassam Sofer to have a part of this year. Avol HaGriv, source number 7, 3 lines in the bottom, the Kainalim, Baruch Hashem Chelo, Afilu Chalalim Shevahem, Imkein, Afilu Rikam Yishmai Yagal Yishon Tzchal Le'imo, even if in Shemayim they know that his mother is non-pedigree, Kol Mashi Yigriv Kashi. So this is the first impediment that we have caught. The second impediment is, well, we don't have a base on Mikdash, so we don't need a base on Mikdash, and all we need is a Mizbeach, and the dimensions are pretty clear, but where is the Makom on Mizbeach? The Rambam writes, I don't think I included the Rambam, but it's a very well-known Rambam, Makom HaMizbeach Mechuvan Me'od. It's very, very precise. Can't move the Mizbeach a little bit to the left, can't move a little bit to the right, it's got to be exactly in its location, because that was the Mizbeach of Yitzchak, and that was the Mizbeach of where Kodesh Baruch Hu created Adam, and you can't move the Mizbeach. So the Mizbeach has to be very, very precise, and as best as we could try to map, we don't really know where the Mizbeach was. Well, maybe we do. Remember that Gemara quoted source number 3, where Mizbachim says one of the three Nevi'im who were sent from Babel was made on the Mizbeach, line 2, and one was made on the Makom Mizbeach. So it sounds like you can't scientifically or archaeologically recreate the Makom Mizbeach. They needed first-person testimony through a prophet, or not. Maybe the only reason they needed a prophetic statement was because Yerushalayim had been raised by Nebuchadnezzar and they didn't have the archaeological tools. But today that many people, including most famously Rav Goren, have tried through archaeology and historical documentation to map out the Makom HaMizbeach, perhaps we can build the Mizbeach in its original location and offer a carbon. So this becomes the second pillar of the debate. I ask you please to close to the thing. The second pillar of the debate is, do we have a Makom HaMizbeach in order to be mocked? The third issue, upon which it fails, are two or three other minor issues. Do we need a mountain? Today we may not have a mountain because Yerushalayim is more submerged, the base of Mikdash, because it's surrounded by mountains. But this becomes a third major issue. Let's say we could determine the location of the Mizbeach. Let's say we could determine who a Kohen is. What about clothing the Kohen? So luckily, we don't need a Kohen Gadol for Korban Pesach. So we don't need a tzitz. We don't need a nail, but we still need one particular article of clothing. That's the avnet. The avnet, little belt, contains tchelos. Do we have tchelos? Now keep in mind, this is a conversation that takes place in the early 18th century, before we had anything resembling tchelos. Of course, many people feel we still don't have tchelos. People don't believe that we can restart that tradition without a prophetic opportunity. I don't think I've quoted any sources, right? So the question is, even if the Avnet has Tchelas, is Tchelas as part of Beis HaMikdash something you need a Chilazim for, or that's only for Tzitzis? It's not clear whether the Beis HaMikdash Tchelas in the Big Day Kahuna, in the various garments in the Beis HaMikdash covering the Klei HaMikdash, Big Day Sarad, that may only require a Tchelas dye, not necessarily a Tchelas dye, which comes from a Chilazim, which is obligatory for Tzitzis. So the Rambam writes in Hilchos Klei HaMikdash, source number 6, Kol Makom Shenemar Batara Sheish, Obad, Bapishkin Vuabots, Vitchilas, Amura, Mikol Makom Huatsemer, Hatsabua, Ki Etzel HaShemayim, like the blue of the Shemayim, Shu Pasach Min HaKochol, and then he goes on to Argaman. By the way, it's not clear that we can determine what Argaman is either. There's much locus between the Rambam and the Rambam what Argaman is, so even if we ignore the Tchilas concern, we may not be able to make a decision about what our Gaman is, because we've lost that tradition as well. From the Rambam, it's not clear that you need a Chilazim. So that's the third major pillar of the debate, whether we can recreate the Avnet and clothe the Kohen, even if we could decide upon a Kohen, even if we could determine the Makom HaMizbeach. So it's a world of momentum, but these three, primarily these three obstacles, along with several other technical obstacles, essentially shut down the whole conversation. As I said today, again, there's a movement, no real halachic authorities take the halachic scenario seriously. Isn't an active debate, but it is fascinating that Korban Pesach continues throughout the generations to exert such a powerful sway on Am Yisrael and desire so deeply wedded to our struggle to return to Eretz Yisrael. And we're in the Midbar, and we're right at that precipice, and we're about to fall off the precipice in 1 to 30 years. Hashem says, bring the Karban Pesach, and bring the Pesach Sheni if you can, and be long, and maybe you'll arrive in Eretz Yisrael. And Yoshiyahu is about to leave Eretz Yisrael, and he realizes on the eve of his departure from Eretz Yisrael, that the Chuldas made it completely and unmistakably clear that they're about to leave Eretz Yisrael. Let's formulate a verse around Karban Pesach. And Hillel fixes the Masara in Eretz Yisrael because he offers some response about being makriv Karban Pesach on Shabbos, and that changes the fate of history and the fate of Torah in Eretz Yisrael. And throughout the centuries, as Jews have seen windows of opportunity to return to Eretz Yisrael, Sina says, well, part of our return to Eretz Yisrael is to experience Pesach in a fuller fashion we've experienced in Chutz La'aretz, Ashat Avdei, Lashon Haba of Eretz Yisrael. That sense that Lashon Haba of Yerushalayim, we can still perform Matzah, still perform Mara, every mitzvah is still available, but someone asked me about a week before Pesach, 2 weeks before Pesach, when did Chasal Seder Pesach come? Why do we say Chasal Seder Pesach at the end of the Seder? So it turns out it's actually the end of a piyut. One of the piyutim, which was recited on Shabbos HaGadol, was a piyut written by Rabbi Yosef Tov Ilam, the 10th century French rabbi, very famous Baal HaTosfos of Yosef Tov Ilam, called Elokei Aruchos. And it's a short summary of all the Seferos Pesachim. So part of the preparation for Pesach was not just reading the Haggadah, but learning the Halachos. Everyone can learn all the Seferos Pesachim on Shabbos Haggadah in the afternoon. It's a short 4 or 5 pages. If you want to take a look at the old piyutim of Shabbos Haggadah, Elokei Aruchos, and the last part of the piyut was Chasal Seder Pesach Ki Hilchos. So we've now read the Halachos of Pesach. It's not about the Seder of Pesach, it's about the Seder of Halachos that they studied. And of course, he ended Hashat Zach Shochein Ona. After we finish the Karban Pesach, reading about the Halachos of Pesachim, we think and we hope that one day we'll discuss the Magid. It's actually a part of this rabbinic poll. They always ask questions, like they published in one of the newspapers in America. So they asked me which mitzvah that I've never performed in my life would I like to perform once in my life. They asked me last night during dinner, I wrote back, obviously, Karban Pesach. Karban Pesach and Aliyah L'Regos. Every Hashem, we should see each other in Yerushalayim. Knowing about all the history of Karban Pesach, and understand we should see each other in the Azara with our goats and sheep in him.